Hello, fellow Rebel Capitalists. Hope you're well. We're back in HQ, Rebel HQ, or Rebel Base Camp, as my good friend Hugh Hendry calls it. And I wanted to go over some of my thoughts around this Argentina trip, because if you saw my interview with Chris McIntosh, that's when I was still in Argentina, and we were talking about one of the or some of the reasons why people might not want gold or silver or Bitcoin. Now, this came as a huge surprise because prior to this road trip to freedom, I thought that finding people or finding gold dealers was going to be the easy part. I actually thought that finding Bitcoin cafes would be relatively easy. But what we found is that it was next to impossible to find anyone. And again, there's a lot of confusion online that I see. People look at some of the things I've been posting on Twitter and some of the comments or some of the things I've said on these videos, and they assume that what I'm talking about when I say nobody wants gold or Bitcoin is no one wants to transact in gold or Bitcoin. They say, oh, George, well, this makes sense because Bitcoin hasn't got to that point where it's a medium of exchange. It's still a store of value, and gold is kind of back into that mode. It's no longer really money, although, you know, the definition of money, it's no longer used as money in the United States or in the Western world like it used to be. So that makes a lot of sense. But I'm not saying that people don't want to transact. I'm saying people don't want it, period. And this is not an example of Gresham's Law, like many people said online. We're like, well, of course, people are going to transact with the hyperinflating currency and they're going to save gold, Bitcoin, or silver. No, that's not what they're doing. And the reason we know this is because we couldn't sell it. For a lot of you guys that watch the videos, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And silver was definitely the winner, that we could sell little bits of that, a couple coins here and there, but you can't survive. And the whole point of the trip was to figure out how to survive outside of the system. And so then gold, you say, well, we could do that, but then you got to take a 50% haircut. And is it a store of value if you have to take a 50% haircut, or you're at the whim of really whomever's buying it? You think that there's no counterparty risk with these things, and you realize that you have massive counterparty risk from the standpoint of, it just depends on what that person that you're selling it to is willing to give you. And if there's no liquidity, then that's counterparty risk. So when I was talking to Chris, if you guys watched that video, I thought the reason for this was likely because there's a lot of the people there still in the mode where they're increasing their savings to a point where they've got that 6 months, the emergency fund, as Dave Ramsey calls it. And then maybe in the future, they would start to transition into a store of value that had a little less liquidity. I've changed my mind. I don't think that's correct, because after I was talking to Chris, that was really, something didn't seem right about that hypothesis. And it was really bothering me. And I kept thinking about it and thinking about it. And suddenly it dawned on me. And after Josh and Shane left, when I was going back to Mendoza, then the challenge was over. So I was actually able to use my debit card, or try to use my credit card debit card. So I kept going to ATM machines. And this is kind of the epiphany light bulb moment I had. I kept going to ATM machines, and it said that I couldn't take out, or basically the machine was out of money. It kept saying the machine is out of money. The machine is out of money. I thought it was about my card, but no, I was actually saying the machine itself. And this didn't, I'm like, wow, that's weird. And then on the options to take out money, the maximum you could withdraw was 40,000 pesos, which is the equivalent of about $40. So I'm like, that's weird. And then if you guys watch the videos, you remember a lot of times we would show these huge lines for the ATM machines prior to the bank's opening. When I mean huge lines, I mean like 100 yards long. And then when I asked the people, they'd say they have to do this every single day. And back then, I didn't really connect the dots. I thought, I don't know, you want your money in the bank for an interest rate? It didn't really make sense. But now I think I've got a handle on what's going on with the banking system, what's going on with government regulation, and why that's at the core of people not wanting gold, silver, or Bitcoin. So let's go over to this. We're going to actually go to one of the live streams. And Josh, can you see this?
Yes.
Okay, so we are in Cordoba right now. We just got done with breakfast, and we had to sell some Bitcoin because at this point, I quite literally didn't have enough money to pay the hotel where we were supposed to check out in like an hour. So walking by, we did this live stream of, well, this is where we started it. And all these people that you see are queuing up for the ATM.
For the ATM just to get cash. I'm assuming it's because obviously it has something to do with hyperinflation. I'm assuming it's...
And that was actually wrong. It didn't directly have anything to do with hyperinflation. I'll explain in a moment. So right now I'm asking him if this is an every single day thing. All right. Now, what I'd like you guys to do for a moment, let me switch up the screen share. And this... It was actually tough for me to get in this mindset. It's something you kind of got to concentrate on because it's so bizarre in today's world. You have to try to imagine a world with no banks where you couldn't really have a bank account. So why? Think about this. What happens if you have $10,000 in the bank? You're done. You might as well flush it down the toilet. Why? Because you are living in hyperinflation. So when you put those pesos in the bank, if you go back to get them 6 months later, what's going to happen to the value of those pesos? They're going to be almost worthless relative to when you put them in. You're going to lose, let's just say, 50, 60, 70, 80% of your purchasing power just over the 6 months. So now that might not be too much of a problem if you could actually spend the money. But think about it. You really can't. Why is that? Because so many people want to transact outside of the system, you're going to need cash. But the only cash you can get is $40 a day. So if you have $10,000 in the bank and you can only get $40 a day, that doesn't help you. That the majority of your money is going to be locked up in the bank. And you say, well, George, you could spend that money giving it to someone else. You think someone else wants to take that liability? You think someone else wants to take your $10,000 with the pesos and put it in their bank account to where it's effectively locked up? And the only way that it won't be locked up is if they can find someone that will gladly accept those hyperinflating pesos. You see, so nobody wants their money in the bank. It's basically in jail. And obviously the government did this to reduce the level of hyperinflation. I mean, it's an insane policy and it's quite frankly evil when you think about it. But what they did is they told the banks that no one is allowed to take out over $40 a day because we want to try to reduce velocity. That's basically what's going on. So they're trying to micromanage the economy from a top-down position. And they said, okay, we're only going to create basically $1 bills. That's going to be the maximum denomination, which is 1,000. That's basically $1. So the maximum is 2,000, but very few of those circulate. So the majority of what circulates, the maximum is literally $1. And so the government did that on purpose. And then they only allow you to take out $40 a day. And again, this is the central planner's effort to try to reduce inflation. But what this does, obviously it screws the average Joe and Jane, but it makes the banking system completely unusable, absolutely unusable. So the only thing that is usable on a very, very short-term basis are pesos, but though that's cash, you don't want those pesos in the bank. Because again, let's think this through. If the government, if your experience with the government is where they come in with all these draconian measures that you can only extract $40. Well, who's to say that they're not going to come out tomorrow? I'm sure Malay is in charge, but who's to say? I mean, you got PTSD here. Who's to say that they're not going to come out and say, okay, now no money out. And then if no money can get out of the banking system, then basically the peso becomes useless. Then only people would transact in dollars because you couldn't even use your debit card. Because who's going to take those pesos if that's locked up in the banking system and those pesos that are locked up in monetary jail are losing value at 20, 30, 40, 50% per month. And that's what it is right now. It's about maybe 15, 20% per month. But it's been ramping up to the point where, who knows, if you're an Argentinian, you're obviously concerned that that could go to a 100% a month, 1,000% a month, 2,000% a month, you see? So then you ask yourself, okay, George, well, wouldn't that want them, or wouldn't that incentivize them to hold Bitcoin and gold even more? And this is where you've really got to kind of focus on this and go through this thought experiment. Because another comment that I was getting on social media quite a lot that makes sense is that, hey, well, look, you're basically calling the Argentinians stupid. Like, hey, well, if they would have just bought gold 2 years ago, then they would have maintained that purchasing power. Well, not really. Because again, that purchasing power is predicated on counterparty risk. And what's the counterparty risk? That you find someone that's willing to accept that gold, or you find, even at a reasonable price, or you find someone that's actually willing to accept that Bitcoin. You say, well, George, why wouldn't you be able to find someone that did that? Or why wouldn't you be able to find someone that will willingly accept those forms of money in hyperinflation? Well, if you guys watch the videos, you saw the reality of the situation, that no one does. But again, so this is what I was struggling with. This is what just didn't make sense to me at all. But let's assume for a moment that you're in the United States right now and nobody has a bank account. Nobody. Okay. And let's say that you've got $50,000 worth of gold. What are you going to do with it? Let's just say that you needed to sell it for whatever reason. How are you going to do that? You say, oh, George, well, that's easy. I'm just going to go down to the local gold dealer. Okay. How's he going to pay you? And you say, oh, George, this is easy. He's just going to give me $50,000 in cash. Oh, really? You think he's going to have $50,000 in cash just laying around? And let's just assume that he does. Why would he give that to you? You see, this is what we have to really think through. Because if he has $50,000 in cash and whatever currency, I guess I should have used a different country because we'd be dealing with two separate currencies. But let's just say for a moment that the US dollar is hyperinflating and the Swiss franc isn't. So he's holding on to Swiss francs. So you go to this gold dealer and he says, okay, I'll give you $50,000 worth of pesos. And you say, no, I don't want that. Why would I want that? Because there's no way I can spend 50,000 pesos or $50,000 worth of, $50,000 of this hyperinflating currency. I can't spend that within the next week. And so I want to sell you this gold, but I don't want to sell it to you for a hyperinflating currency. I want to sell it to you for a currency that is stable relative to goods and services that I'm buying. So then the gold dealer says, okay, well, there's no way I'm going to give you my Swiss francs. And you say, George, why wouldn't he do that? Wouldn't he want the gold even more than Swiss francs? Because that's a fiat currency and that's likely losing value. But what you're not realizing is that, let's say the gold dealer does get the gold. Now, what does he do with it, right? If he's a gold dealer, he's there to make money, not just collect gold, right? So now he's got to find a buyer for that $50,000 worth of gold that will give him not the dollars that are hyperinflating, but the Swiss francs that are maintaining their value. And it goes around and around and around and around. And then what you realize is, well, wait a minute. How would these Swiss francs get into the United States? If they're something that's incredibly liquid, if they're maintaining their value to a certain degree, right, then people are going to be hoarding them. It's going to be Gresham's Law. And if they're hoarding them, then they're going to be incredibly scarce. Well, then go back to the original gold dealer. What's the probability that he has $50,000 worth of Swiss francs? And then what's the probability that he's willing to give it to you, to your gold, or for your gold that's highly illiquid, if his whole business is to sell that gold at a profit to increase his purchasing power? You see? Hey guys, I want to invite each and every one of you to join me May 31st through June 2nd in Orlando for Rebel Capitalist Live. This is the annual conference I do, and this year it's going to be absolutely incredible. We're going to have some of your favorites there as speakers. Guys like Jeff Snyder, Mike Green, The Real Estate, Kenny McElroy. We're going to have Robert Barnes. They're talking about freedom and liberty. Even Rich Cooper is going to be there discussing red pill issues. This event is all about giving you the intel, the insider information you need to not only survive 2024, but thrive. The whole reason I created this event was to give you the tools you need to build the future you deserve for yourself and your family. This is an event you are not going to want to miss. So to get more information, go to rebelcapitalistlive.com. You can see a full list of speakers we've had in the past. You can see clips from past events. And most importantly, you can get your tickets. As we get closer to the event, the tickets go up in price. So you're going to want to get those ASAP at rebelcapitalistlive.com. And we will see you in Orlando, May 31st through June 2nd. What we have to realize in Argentina right now is there is a massive premium on liquidity and a store of value, not just a store of value. Because at the end of the day, gold or whatever you have, it's not a store of value unless you can find somebody that wants to buy it from you and exchange that store of value for stuff, for goods and services, or at least exchange it for a medium of exchange to where you can buy those goods and services. Look, at the end of the day, no one on this live stream right now wants gold. Nobody. Peter Schiff doesn't want gold. And Michael Saylor doesn't want Bitcoin. They want the stuff gold can buy. They want the goods and services Bitcoin can buy. You see? But if nobody has a bank account, then nobody is going to want anything other than what is the most liquid asset, which maintains to a certain degree its value. Because if there's no bank accounts, if you are taking on gold, if you are taking on Bitcoin, you are taking on a liability. And that's what I really didn't understand. I had to have that light bulb moment. And I think that's what's so almost impossible for people in the West to really understand. Because for us, it's just like, well, of course I want gold, of course I want silver, because it's gonna be a store of value. And then I'm just gonna be able to take it down to the local gold dealer, or I'm just gonna be able to go online and just sell my Bitcoin if I ever need to. And I'm going to get the purchasing power that is equivalent to what's on my balance sheet right now in terms of this digital or physical store of value. Because at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. But you have to imagine a world where, number one, their currency is inflating to a point where you wouldn't want $50,000 worth of that currency, because next month it's only worth $25,000 of stuff. So cross that off the list. And then no one can pay you in anything other than dollars. And dollars are incredibly, incredibly, incredibly scarce, to the point where if someone has them, they're at the top of the food chain and no one wants to get rid of them. Because as crazy as this sounds, in a world where there are no bank accounts, those green pieces of paper have more value than the gold or the Bitcoin, because you don't have to worry about that liquidity. There's going to be a massive liquidity premium. So even as I don't think I did a great job of explaining that, I apologize, because it's still something that I'm working through. But if you're trying to understand what's going on in Argentina, I would caution you against coming to the conclusion that they're just stupid. Oh, well, it's just in their culture. Well, they're just poor. They don't have any financial education. No. Josh, and you're more than welcome to chime in here. With those gold guys that we dealt with, how many of those guys were stupid? How many of those guys didn't have a financial education? My point here is those guys were sharks. Let me tell you what, they were sharks. And they had, I would argue, they know more about finances in the real world than someone that has their MBA from Harvard. They've got the common sense PhD in finance. I can tell you that for sure. And I would argue that if someone has lived in hyperinflation for 10 years or whatever it's been, they know a hell of a lot. They're far more financially sophisticated in terms of practicality than any of us on this live stream. So it's not that they're stupid. It's not that they're uneducated. It's not that they're ignorant or unsophisticated. So it's got to be something else. And then you say, well, George, it must be because they're all just living in caves or living in little huts and they're destitute. They don't have any savings. That's not it. That's kind of what I thought initially when I was talking to Chris, but that's wrong. And Josh can attest to that. I keep telling him to chime in. He's probably doing something else. But what, Josh, well, when we were in Mendoza, did you ever at one time think to yourself, oh my gosh, this is a third world country?
No. I was telling one of my buddies that I felt way better in Mendoza than I have in just about any U.S. city. From a,
what do you mean by better?
Standpoint, from the people there, even the technology, there was nothing about it that would make you think it's a third world country.
And what's fascinating is if you never used anything other than your credit card, you would, as a tourist, you would never know there's hyperinflation. You'd never know.
No, I would have thought
what that we think about so when we think of hyperinflation in countries dealing with this, we think about, you know, everyone being homeless. Basically, we think about what you'd see in the United States if you drive through San Francisco or Seattle or Portland. That's what we think hyperinflation looks like, ironically. And when you actually come to Argentina where they're experiencing hyperinflation, there's none of it. It looks like the United States back in the 1980s or the 1990s. Mendoza looks like Pasadena. I mean, it's pristine. It's pristine. Everyone's walking around. There's coffee shops open, the restaurants, the gyms. It's normal life. Normal life in the United States, not now, but what we saw back in the 80s and 90s when I was growing up, where the streets weren't filled with homeless people and basically tent cities that you have now, at least in several areas on the coast, especially the West Coast. But you get my point, is that it's not that there's no middle class and people don't have savings, because there's middle class people everywhere, for heaven's sakes. In Mendoza, 1.1 million people. There's tons of wealth there. And granted, there's not going to be the middle class that you have in the United States. I'm not saying that. But you have a significant middle class, enough to where people, trust me, people have savings there above and beyond a Dave Ramsey emergency fund. It's not like people are riding around on donkeys, for heaven's sakes, living in some sort of mud hut, which is what we think of as Americans when we think of Argentina and hyperinflation. No. They're driving around in Mercedes and Toyotas and BMWs and a lot of these Chinese cars that are garbage, but they're just, it's normal everyday life. Just like I said on a lot of those live streams, I could drop you right in the middle of Mendoza and you would have no idea you're not in the United States if everyone is speaking English. And Cordoba was a little more gritty, but I would far rather be in Cordoba than Baltimore or New Orleans or, you know, parts of Chicago. That's for sure. So it has to be something else. And when you think about it in terms of nobody having a bank account, they might have bank accounts, but they're sure as hell not going to use them, because then your money goes to money heaven. It goes into jail and you ain't getting it back. And if you do get it back, it's going to be $40 a day if you're lucky. And that's if you can get to those ATM. One thing I didn't mention is, sure, those people are in line first thing in the morning. That was before the bank opened. Why? Because by 10 o'clock, they're out of cash. They're done. The ATMs have no more cash until the very next day. So the maximum you can get out is $40. So just go through these thought experiments as to what you would do if you had $50,000. What would you do with your house, for heaven's sakes, if you needed to sell it and nobody had a bank account? Nobody. And you were dealing in a currency that hyperinflated. Let's say you've got a house that's $250,000 right now, and you sure as hell didn't want them to transfer the money to you. Because again, we don't want that money in the bank. So what do you do? Do you take the $250,000 with the pesos that are hyperinflating that within 2 months is going to be worth $100,000? How do you spend it fast enough? You can't. And then you say, well, George, I would just demand that this person pays me in US dollars. Great. Where are they going to get the dollars? They're not going to have 250 grand laying around, right? And even if there was $250,000 that they might have access to within the local community, those people sure as hell aren't going to trade pesos for those dollars. They're not going to trade anything for them. So you see, you get this bizarre environment where there's just absolutely no liquidity for anything except for dollars and pesos going back and forth. And based on our experience, Josh, that's exactly what we saw. Exactly what we saw. So when you think about it through that lens, it makes a lot more sense. So then you've got to step back and say, okay, if this is true and I really want a plan B where I'm bulletproof, I've got to think about a way to have the flexibility to bounce from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. Because even if you've got the gold, silver, Bitcoin, if the central planners come in, forget the on-ramp, forget making it illegal. Forget that. All they have to do is what Argentina did, and effectively all the liquidity for whatever it is you have outside of US dollars is gone. Poof. Because the banking system no longer exists. So look, is Bitcoin illegal? Is gold illegal? No, absolutely not. But it might as well be, you see? And sure, you could go there as like a nomad, a digital nomad, and with your Bitcoin, if you were in Buenos Aires, and you could find a little shop there that would give you your, let's say, $40 a day to pay for your hostel or whatever. And that's fine. You can absolutely do that. But it's not a solution for most people. It's definitely not a solution for people with families. And again, think about your counterparty risk. Josh, how many, look, when I went into this, I thought there would be all of these Bitcoin cafes that we could go to, we could just pull up on the app, and that we would find other people there that we could just do peer-to-peer transactions. And I would give them my Bitcoin. They'd give me, maybe hopefully they even had dollars. But if not, they'd give me the hyperinflating pesos, because obviously they would want those a lot more, or they would want Bitcoin a lot more than this currency that's losing value at the speed of light. But Josh, how many Bitcoin cafes did we find?
Oh, we went to at least a dozen or two.
Yeah. How many did we find
that accepted Bitcoin? Zero.
No. How many Bitcoin cafes did we find, period?
Well, there was a bunch on BTC maps.
Yeah. Right. And we went to almost every single one every of them in one. Mendoza. Not and then in Cordoba. And how many were actually Bitcoin cafes?
Not a single one.
None. Zero. Nada. Nada. So this utopian vision, this libertarian peer-to-peer utopian vision where you just go down to the local coffee shop, it's fake news. Now, I hope that it exists in Turkey or El Salvador or other places that we're going to go, but it sure as hell didn't exist in Argentina. So what that means is we were able to find two places. Now, I'm sure there's probably more, but we were able to find two places in Buenos Aires. And keep in mind, there's a city of 15 million people. So what if you're in a city of only 3 million? Then you're SOL. But let's just assume that they had those two cambio dealers that did accept Bitcoin. And keep in mind, we had to twist their arm because we were trying to get $200. And they wanted, first and foremost, US Tether. That's what they wanted. So just out of the goodness of their heart, they were willing to take the Bitcoin, which they immediately turned into Tether, and give us just a couple $100. But again, it's not something that you can live on, right? You'd only be able to get small amounts per day. Why? Because think about it from their standpoint. They don't want to keep a lot of these pesos around because they're losing value so much. And are they going to have the dollars? If they did, they sure as hell aren't going to give them to you. So then let's assume for a moment that, I don't know, those two guys just go on holiday. Now what are you going to do? You're going to starve. You're going to be homeless. That's counterparty risk. And nobody thinks about that. And again, why? It's not necessarily because gold or Bitcoin or silver are bad. It's because if you are in a system without banks and where the only thing that's liquid is incredibly scarce. Effectively, that's the only thing that has purchasing power, whether we like it or not. And that's just the cold, hard truth. That's the reality. Again, what I've said this whole trip is that we can talk about all these things in theory, and they sound fantastic until you put them into practice, and they just simply don't work. Or it shows you how exposed you are to your local government. Even if you think you've got a solution, even if you think you have something that they can't control, even if you think you have something that is outside of their power, at the end of the day, they can, and I'm not even saying they did this intentionally. They probably, I know they didn't do this intentionally. They did it to curb hyperinflation, but what they did, the unintended consequence, was to turn the only thing that anyone wants, or the only thing that's liquid, on the short term, their stupid pesos, and on the long term, just green pieces of paper. So what we're going to have to do, I'm very excited to go to Turkey. If you guys didn't hear, we've already started to plan the next trip. We're doing September 1st through the 15th because I'm much more, I was very optimistic about Argentina to begin with, as far as our ability to transact outside of the system. Not so much anymore. Although from a plan B standpoint, it's fantastic. It's gorgeous. And I cannot encourage you to go there and check it out yourself enough. It's one of the most spectacular places I've ever been in the world, period, bar none. I've been to over 45 countries. But now that I know what I know, I'm much more optimistic about Turkey in terms of being able to transact outside of the system and having liquidity for Bitcoin, gold, silver. Why? Because when I was there, and this could have changed, I don't remember these huge long lines at banks to get cash. So what that tells me is they haven't implemented that rule of only $40 a day, which changes everything. That just changes absolutely everything. And I also believe that in Turkey, the banks offer multi-currency accounts, and they also offer a way to take your Turkish lira and exchange them for gold that they actually store for you. So they're like a bank slash gold dealer almost. And so that would change everything as well. And under those circumstances, I would assume that far more things that you own on your balance sheet would have liquidity. And obviously what I'm talking about is gold, silver, Bitcoin. All right, guys, on that bombshell, I'd like to encourage you to check out rebelcapitalistlive.com. Oh, you know what? I did a little whiteboard drawing, and I forgot to go to that, Josh. Well, you know what? I might do a whiteboard video on this topic Monday or Tuesday. So I'll save the whiteboard drawing that I was going to go over to illustrate kind of what I was talking about with the gold dealer. But we'll save that for next week. I want to encourage you guys to go check out rebelcapitalistlive.com. Let's go over there right now and look at some.
You'll need to reshare your screen.
Yeah, I know. I sure wish we could do all this stuff without having to reshare. Okay, here we go. So we've got speakers. Oh, by the way, Josh, I don't know if I told you this, but Brent Johnson texted me and he asked me if he could come as a VIP guest. Obviously, I'm like, sure. So we'll probably get him up there in a panel discussion as well. So we got Mike Green, Kenny, Jeff Hartman, Chris McIntosh, always incredible live for sure. Mark Moss, Joseph Wang, we're going to be talking to him today. Rich Cooper talking about red pill stuff, Barnes and Ivor Cummins. I think, honestly, he's probably going to be people's favorite. And then we've got another person that we're going to add that we haven't announced yet. And the VIP of the VIP guests is Mr. Josh Lessard himself. But we've also got Viva Fry, an educated economist. And you know who else is coming too? Josh, I don't know if I told you. Kenny texted me and he said Kiyosaki's coming. So, yeah, I don't know if Kiyosaki wants to speak. He just kind of wings it. And I just leave it open for him. So don't be surprised if Kiyosaki gets up there on stage and gives you his 2 cents. But at the very least, he's going to be there rubbing elbows with everyone hanging out at the cocktail parties. Another VIP guest in addition to Brent Johnson. So get your tickets ASAP, guys, at rebelcapitalistlive.com. And as always, make sure that you're standing up for freedom, liberty, free market capitalism. We'll see you on the next video.